so we left off on the discussion surrounding impact of activity in relation to zoning and or triggering of a use permit, specifically as a
distribution.
A distribution site. And what would trigger that?
The loss of the site. Where he put water in the truck and hauling it outside. He had to go through a secret use permit process to be allowed to do that. Why wouldn't that apply here?
It does.
So under current?
Correct. Code? Yeah, so the zoning would have to come into place, right? You have to change your zoning.
Right.
Your rural residential. Or if it could be allowed with a conditional use permit, which rural residential is not happening for that.
Uh-huh.
So it's the same situation.
Right. Right. So you're telling us that you have the mechanism to where that well is at, stuff you put in a truck called off. Force them into the use permit process, CEQA process, to get a use permit to do that activity.
Or change the zoning to which it's allowable.
And so that's the key component.
Right.
The zoning would then allow the activity, but it would require a use permit and CEQA
right.
to get that permit.
So, and now the zoning allows it by right, so we can't go down that road legally right now?
No, it does not allow it by right.
So how come not a cease and desist to determine it complies with the use permit? That's a million-dollar question.
Well, that is a good question. In fact, in cases, there have been some cases where the district attorney actually filed a suit.
So there is a legal avenue to kind of get there.
There is a legal avenue to kind of get there.
Continuing on that path, Joe Smith, he's getting a lot of attention today. Joe Smith has parcel Ag 2. It has a well on it, wants to do a water distribution facility. It's noted, we get cited, say, hey, you need a use permit to do that, and you need to rezone X amount of area in order to get the use permit. In the process of getting that use permit and going through CEQA, will that go before the State Water Board to do an assessment as to whether or not that water that is being bottled and distributed, whether that water can be distributed?
Yeah, I don't know for sure. I'd have to get back to
you. Just sent your guess that since the county would be the lead, they have to distribute the State Clearinghouse.
Correct.
Which then goes to all the public agencies.
Correct.
And if an agency doesn't respond, how can the county respond back to the State Water Board to do the job? It's kind of like what we're dealing with right now with the TMDL, with what Cal Fish and Wildlife said you will analyze, and the State Water Board staff is just turning a blind eye to it.
Right. That's
it's following the legal road path process, crossing your T's, dotting your I's, getting all your ducks in a row so that.
So is staff saying they're not confident we have language that supports that action?
Well,
because I get the conversation Mr. Dean and I had about an activity and essentially increased in average daily trips, whether it be on public land, private land. it is a an activity that is happening beyond the scope of what it's zoned for. Plain and simple.
Exactly, and as no pun intended, it's been kind of muddy, and you know, maybe the best thing is for us staff just to sit back and take a look at it and come up with something more concrete.
Because we had a good back and forth throwing spitballing, you know, something to take a look at. Take a look at the original subdivision, the project, and what was the Subdivision Act at the time when it was created. Were there limitations? We know there were CC&Rs, but were there other guidance, mitigating factors, findings that allowed for that to be subdivided? Are those all being followed? May not have to recreate the wheel.
Yeah, point taken.
Okay. Other, we were on
three.
Anything else on three for industrial zoning?
So something that we didn't mention so far, but you brought up and it refreshed my memory, is distilleries, wineries, and breweries, specifically micro distilleries, wineries, and breweries. Quite often in other jurisdictions, this is not limited to a heavy industrial zoning district. It could be, if it's a winery, it could be an accessory use to the grapes. Even I have a friend up in Ashland who has a meadery that is in a very small garage on his piece of property that got converted into a distillery for his mead. So it's a little, you know, seeing in other jurisdictions not in the heavy industrial district makes us realize internally that it potentially could be a use that's allowed in other districts.
And we have a winery that is, we have two wineries in Siskiyou County that are on ag land.
So we had a winery project that I believe is no longer moving forward.
They withdrew, but the land was zoned rural residential, and so.
The one in Scott Valley or
yep.
The one down Scott River Road?
Scott River Road, right.
Meander Creek.
Meander Creek.
Okay.
And so the proposal was to operate a winery and then vineyard. And then process into wine and then have a tasting room. So we were proposing a zone change to have it be all allowed outright because the processing aspect, but the application was pulled.
Okay. Because that's kind of similar to our seed discussion.
Mm-hmm.
We do have one winery that is located with no grapes whatsoever being
right.
grown on the land.
Right.
They're bringing the grapes in and
yeah.
processing them. And so there's a question.
Mm-hmm.
It's an agricultural business, but in that case, it's not accessory to what's taking place on that farm. Is a winery considered manufactured?
Processing.
So the question you're asking, Rachel, is J there, it is allowed by right, or it is a permitted, requires a permit?
This is in,
conditional on industrial?
Yeah, and this is in the, the middle industrial with a use permit.
So being as there is potential for gases to be given off, I think industrial, whether it be light, medium, or heavy, it should be allowed, but not necessarily needed for a permit. They have to get other permits from Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco,
mm-hmm.
and Firearms to operate. They're going to be inspected.
So what we've had people ask us about is they want to have a winery on the ag property that they are growing grapes, and they want to have a tasting room. And And so when we look at wineries, we're like, this is only in the industrial district, which, you know.
What do they do in other counties in California?
I can't hear you.
I've seen both, you know, pertinent to wineries. I've seen it allowed in ag zoning districts and industrial zoning districts.
Napa allows it on ag. Sonoma mm-hmm. requires them to change the zoning of the
yep.
where the winery is and the tasting room
yeah.
is sitting.
Well, and I want to say, too, it was either Napa or Sonoma County. They have a lot of detailed zoning districts. Like, I want to say there was, like, a heavy industry ag zoning district, right, where it's really geared towards vineyards and tasting rooms and things like
and
that.
And dairies.
Yeah.
Dairies and vineyards
yep.
are both under that heavy
yeah.
industrial ag.
Whereas we just have more general, you know, districts, but...
So is the question, should we allow it with a CU on ag? I would say
mm-hmm.
doesn't require a CU if they're growing the grapes that they're processing. If they are importing the grapes, then it would require a CU.
Mm-hmm.
That would encourage another agricultural commodity, because they wouldn't have to be permitted if they were growing the grapes. And if they just want to do the making of the wine, okay, get a CU.
So do you have, we don't have anything.
Yeah, if you are adding value to what you're growing on that land,
yeah.
no CU needed.
Cool. Yeah. Regarding the other two distilleries and breweries, I don't know that we have any beer or alcohol products that are extensively grown in our county, but I'm going to defer to you on that.
Brewery, it is headed in that direction. There are a
yeah.
few of us that are going to be growing the grain for Aetna Brewery
yeah.
And also for their distillery. Jim Morris is playing around with some different varieties that Andrew wants to see how well they grow.
Mm-hmm.
Our big issue is being able to store them long enough to keep them in the quality
mm-hmm.
so that it doesn't degrade and impact flavor.
Mm-hmm.
That's the challenge we're trying to address right
mm-hmm.
now. So I'd say the potential is there, but it's probably not an issue here because I might be growing one of the grains used by Aetna Brewery. It's not going to be distilled or brewed on my place.
Yeah.
It's going to be done in Fort Jones or in Aetna. So it's kind of a mute issue, but
would,
it could be.
Yeah, that's the question. Would it be a potential for maybe a different property and property owner that you guys would want to see
based
changed?
On our discussion earlier, if I'm not selling the beer or the whiskey or the gin, I'd have to get a CU to do a brewery or a distillery on
mm-hmm.
my place. I'm basically growing a commodity and selling it to somebody.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So it's not applicable.
So what about for apiaries, for a meadery, like I brought up earlier? Would you still consider that along the same lines of you have the bees on your property and, you know, you potentially buy honey from your neighbor as well, and or apples for cider?
No, that would go back. You have property
mm-hmm.
and you are raising bees. You are also a subcontractor, potentially service for bees for pollination. The honey started with your bees, made by your bees, brought back to your property, whether it's from your property, neighboring, or 50 miles away. But they're your bees, your product, you're adding value to it. No permit needed.
Tasting rooms in that same vein, would that be, in your opinion,
are you growing what's being tasted?
An incidental to agriculture.
Are you growing what's being tasted on
yes.
that land? No permit needed. Now, if you're giving me something to taste that you didn't grow or wasn't produced on your place, then yeah, you'll need a CU.
Yep.
Through the chair.
what I don't want to see happen with this is that there's going to be so many regulations that nobody's going to want to do anything in this county. And that may be sound a little far-fetched. But we are broke. We need revenue. How do we do that and not tie the hands of anybody who wants to come here to go through all the BS just to open a little rinky-dink? I mean, it's not like it's going to serve 10,000 people a day. So how do we do this? Farmer here.
We're heading down that path right now.
Yeah. Huh?
What we're talking about here, we're eliminating CUs.
Good.
For accessory uses.
Good.
I think that's a big step.
Yeah.
Now, you highlighted feed stores.
Feed stores. This
What's your definition of feed store?
I would see if we have one first, because it's interesting because in our commercial districts, we have retail sales as a permitted use. So unless I was specifically looking at an industrial district, if somebody came to me for a feed store in a commercial district, I'd look and say, oh, retail sales are allowed. Sure, I'm going to sign off on that. I'm not quite sure why they're pulling this one out, why they put feed stores separately. Mm-hmm. From...
Now, is that requiring a permit?
No, but it's...
So it shouldn't.
But it, but it's an industrial district.
Yeah.
So...
Well, see, feed stores, historically, not necessarily today... Although in Oregon they still do, you could buy fertilizer, herbicide, and other chemicals at your feed store. Now, little old Scott Valley Feed, yeah, they have some quote-unquote herbicides and whatnot.
Yeah.
It is not like it used to be in the day where I could go in there and buy a 5-gallon can at 2.40.
And it doesn't look like we have a definition of feed store specifically.
Well, a feed store would be selling items, not... produced, grown, made, or manufactured on the property.
So would you consider that potentially an agricultural enterprise that maybe should be allowed in the Ag 2 district?
No.
No?
Because you are not unless it's permitted. But I really don't see in the future anything like that ever happening. None of us can afford to do that. We grow one, two, maybe three different things.
Mm-hmm.
Store doesn't survive selling three things. Especially when we're doing it in bulk.
And in a county with 44,000 people. There's 113,000 people living within the city limits of Redding, California today. Okay, what
anything else on industrial?
I don't think so at this
Rachel?
Time.
No. So to have a feed store, it has to be on an industrial site?
So it's called out specifically in the MM district. However, retail sales is allowed in the other districts, in the other commercial districts. So if I would go to the CC Town Center district,
yeah,
retail stores. So if somebody came to the counter and said, I want to have a feed store, you know, in this district, I'd say retail stores are allowed and I would approve it. Don't know that since it's called out separately in the industrial district, potentially that wasn't what this code intended, but that's where I'm at this point.
I think it's
we're not discriminating just because of zoning, because you're allowing it in all these other districts.
It's not in all the zones, it's just the ones that call out retail stores.
Commercial.
I see what you, so in CC, it does not specifically say feed stores.
Yeah.
But you, under the current staff, would consider a feed store being retail.
Yeah.
That's where the clarification, feed store needs to be listed in CC. Because basically Scott Valley Feed in Scott Valley is on CC. Right there in green.
I don't know, I'd have to double check.
You have the gas station, the bank, and the feed store, and I believe there are two or three more parcels there on either side that are all CC. City Commercial or Center District of the big metropolis of Greenview.
Yeah.
But those are zone CC. And the one in Grenada, I believe, is MM because we had that deal with line of sight or whatnot, ingress, egress. into Cowley's, but I believe that they were MM.
They might actually be heavy.
It
yeah.
could be. Could be.
What I was thinking why was the one in Mount Shasta.
Where's the one in Mount Shasta?
Down there by the fish hatchery. You go back up Old Stage Road, it sits back in trees there. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Maybe yeah. that's on the city property. I don't know.
No, no, he's talking about it. He's doing that in Mount Shasta.
Yeah, I don't know on that one.
See, that one there's been there, I don't know how long.
Forever, probably.
Yeah. My wife used to buy, when she was in high school, would buy grain for her horse at that place.
Oh, that's a nice house.
And I'm not going to tell you when she was in high school.
Well, his grandfather did.
Could right. be.
Yeah.
So, no, your question, I think it should be allowed by right, CC, LI, mm-hmm. or light, medium, right. heavy, should be allowed.
Let me just look real quick at the conditional uses.
I would not go by right on AG1, 2, or R.
Okay.
Because you definitely have an increase in traffic to and from, not only for deliveries, but also customers. And a lot of times it's going to be heavier vehicles. So, you know, that would need to be permitted in an RR or something else.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to just scroll through. These are the heavy industrial conditionally permitted uses just to see if anything catches anybody's eye about what might need to be changed.
Go back up to B. We had this discussion and it's in our safety element now. Composting facilities. County owned property. Is the county going to have to, what's the old airport zone out behind you? Is it industrial?
Which property are you talking about?
The old airport.
That one's heavy industrial.
It is heavy industrial?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so it would be compatible. Zoning wouldn't have to change in order for the county experiment for composting.
Yeah, let me change my
Okay, all right. I just wanted to double check it triggered that since mm-hmm. we had it in the safety element. Okay,
sure.
Continue,
yeah.
Rachel. Mentioned in G also.
So,
that was put in for Bob Axton because the old sale yard used to be zoned industrial down there off Easy Street.
Mm. Through the chair, if I may, forward looking on the composting conversation, all the projects that we've been doing, one and two of the lake and also one in Gazelle, is intended to have that exact scenario set up on ag ground so that that composting can occur for the wolf issue. Right? So, want to include composting in the agricultural zones, AG2 and AG1.
Composting of what?
Dead bodies. Animals, not humans.
You got in the wrong spot. It needs to be at the rest area of grass. That's where they go through, hauling winter log.
Yeah.
Right next to the Forest Service facility.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, they're going to build a house.
Yeah.
Right or wrong, the intent was to get rid of the boneyards and have it there. So it wasn't attractive.
So I was incorrect. It's the property adjacent to the county's property that's heavy industrial. The county's property that's next to the Weed Airport is Ag 2 and Ag 1.
No, Montague.
Montague Airport?
Yeah, Montague is where one of the sites we originally were looking at because it was kind of a central location.
The county airport or the city airport?
County airport.
County.
Airport.
Where you used to be able to dump the mush sewage pots before they had to haul it down to Reading.
So all of this is purple is heavy industrial.
Okay. I'm just making sure that where we're looking at other potential sites, we're not going to be limited based on zoning. Mm-hmm.
The Montague Airport you're talking about is a private airport?
No.
No, no. Is it the military one where the we used to have fighters years ago? Yes.
So you mentioned this earlier. I thought you had said in the commercial poultry operations.
Poultry hog dairy should not require a permit by the county.
So this is heavy industrial with a CUP, commercial hog raising and poultry raising.
So in a CUP, fine, require a permit, but on AG2?
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Slaughterhouses, you're okay for the same reason?
Yeah, that's an accessory. I believe that Heffernan and whoever else wants to have their facility to kill, whether it's inspected or for their own use, it's accessory to their operation. Laws are killing their own, and yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel, can you go back to feedlots, commercial feedlots?
Which zoning district?
Just up from here. It was two or three more up. Right there. Nope, that's the commercial hog and poultry.
Keep going.
Right there it is.
This
commercial
one?
Feed yards and animals there. So to have a commercial feed yard on anything other than heavy industrial, do you have to have a use permit?
Currently?
So let's do a search for...
You're only allowed to have it in heavy industrial.
So Primag, it's a conditionally permitted use. Let's see.
AG2? Or just AG1?
AG2 is a conditionally permitted use.
Currently.
No, it says not including. So I don't know.
Oh, not including.
So it's only allowed, I think, in heavy industrial.
So if there's a commercial feedlot, anything other than heavy industrial, you got to have a use permit.
You need a use permit for heavy industrial, commercial feedlots and dairies, heavy industrial. So staff is. Oh, go ahead.
What's the definition of commercial? That you're backgrounding cattle for somebody else, or you're doing it for your own?
The code doesn't give a definition on commercial feedlots.
A what?
A commercial feedlot.
It does on the feedlot. It does give you a definition of a feedlot, right?
It's the definition where it's commercial feedlot,
right, yeah.
Relatively small confined land area. Yeah.
So it's subjective.
Very subjective.
Yes.
So that's why I said shouldn't require a permit on AG2.
Right.
You should be allowed to do it.
Yeah.
Well, if we're going to go down the road of what we did with the wineries or with some other product, bringing it onto a piece of property, and you're processing it, and then it's going someplace else. It's not being grown there.
Okay.
Shouldn't that apply to all commodities?
Okay, I see what you're saying. I was not thinking of feedlot where I'm going out and buying stockers to supplement what I already have.
I'm talking, you're doing it as a commercial enterprise,
just
feeding
a feedlot.
Out cattle for other people.
Gotcha.
To get them to a certain weight, and then they're shipped out and sold and gone someplace else.
Gotcha.
That's a processing facility.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's a different scenario than I was considering.
And so they should require a use permit?
That's what I'm asking. Are they required?
Currently, yes.
Currently, yes.
And must be on industrial in order to get the permit.
If they have a CAFO permit, where does that fall in the process? Or is that something separate they have to get?
Are there any commercial feedlots zoned in this county?
Yes.
Operating?
Yes.
That would probably be a question for these guys.
Yes.
Are they on industrial?
No.
No.
So what are you going to do?
One of them's been there long time.
Well,
actually, they both have been.
No.
No, only the one.
No.
One that I'm thinking about has been there a long time, and the other two are relevant within the last 10 to 20 years.
6 years.
Okay, I know the one you're talking about.
So both the Ag 1 and Ag 2 allow feedlots with the conditional land use permit. The non-prime agricultural district specifically calls out them as commercial feedlots as well.
But they're allowed.
With a
because
conditional
land use. Because it says uses are permitted, so that means they are allowed without permit on AG 2.
Conditional uses permitted.
Oh.
Conditional. Well, so that means they need a land use permit.
Well, back to Rick's dilemma about traffic in and out, water trucks going in and out, cattle trucks going in and out. Same impact.
Potentially.
Yeah. I just try to treat everybody
firm,
fair, and consistent here. If we're going to force one group to do this, and it's all under this broad category of agricultural enterprises, then everybody needs to play by the same rules. That's what I don't see the state agencies doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. I've been barking at them too much too long.
So how are we going to leave it with the feedlots? Are they going to? What are you going to require for the feedlots?
We're just going to make a suggestion.
Okay, what is the suggestion?
That right what it says under existing zoning, they have to have a use permit. If they don't have it, then it's incumbent upon the county to get them compliant.
And the length of time that they've been in operation?
Irrelevant.
It's irrelevant. The property was zoned. And just to claim ignorance is no excuse.
I would differentiate between a feedlot that is being used to feed livestock born and raised on the property being fed to finish, and a feedlot that is bringing in, you're buying other cattle from around, whether it be neighbors or outside the county coming in. Those are two different.
But they're not even buying.
What?
They're not even buying.
Well,
they're just bringing them in to feed.
Or they're getting paid to feed.
To feed, right.
But if it's a feedlot finishing your own cattle, no permit should be required.
Right, right.
If you are feeding on contract or buying and selling on the rail or what have you, that is a different animal. You need a permit for it.
We already have that.
Correct. It's in place.
Yeah.
As long as commercial feedlot is defined appropriately, because my feeding out 50 calves and then selling them is not the same as somebody else buying 50 cattle, feeding them, getting paid on the rate of gain, and then shipping. Those are two different, but they're both feedlots.
Mm-hmm.
When we impose these restrictions or zoning rules, we better be able to defend.
Well, I'm not.
Let me tell you, because it's easy to put it here and well, the law says this, but then the next thing is be able to defend it because
it's already law.
Yeah.
So, okay.
By the zoning right now.
Yeah, but we're not.
That's what I'm saying is we've already got the tool in place.
Okay.
It's just not being enforced.
Okay. Like a lot of other things.
Like Cal Fish and Wildlife not enforcing 1600s on everybody after Farm Bureau spent all the money they did going to court to say we don't have to have it, and Fish and Game waiting 2 years later and then codifying it in appellate court that yes, you do need a 1600 to open a head gate.
Yeah.
And this is very verifiable. Because you can come out and you see the calves in my feedlot. If they don't have my ID, my traceability tag in them, they have somebody else's, I'm in violation. Whether it's cattle, sheep, or goats, we all have our premise IDs that have to be on our livestock. Same thing with chickens. Same thing with turkeys.
All I'm saying is, you go down that road,
yep.
Be real. And the county better be willing to put up the funds to prosecute because it doesn't do any good to put a
law. We're not putting anything on the book other than what's already there.
Right.
We're just affirming what's already there.
Yeah.
Sheriff Al, staff has already generated a list of all the possible uses in our zoning code, and we've matched it to the different zoning districts. So perhaps at another meeting, we could just go through and you could say, okay, single family dwellings are allowed in these zones. And then you could go really quickly through as opposed to flipping back and forth.
Yes, like if Commissioner Hart would hold up, I have the same cheat sheet.
Me too. Well, we've all got this document right here.
But, but essentially what you're saying is it's tabular format.
Yeah, and then you can see it all at once.
I would love a copy of that.
Yeah, we can email it to you and then perhaps it'd be more of a efficient discussion.
Planning on bringing it forward at another juncture.
No, that would be great.
For the more.
Mm-hmm. It's not a big deal right at the moment, but it is a big deal with all this water stuff that's going on. Particularly with this confined animal feeding operation permits that you're supposed to have when you've got big lots like this. And I'm looking at the water impact, nitrate poisoning, in groundwater wells next to residential. That's a huge problem in the Central Valley. It's not here yet, but it's the same thing with what's going on upslope. With all the chemicals being dumped, no, they're not showing up now. But eventually they're going to show up. And then it's going to be in the water system because they're forever chemicals. Just trying to head off a problem, that's all. Mm-hmm. And the way you build infrastructure, they don't want business.
Anything else on industrial?
No.
Okay. Four.
What uses should be allowed in ag zoning districts? So I think we're pretty clear on, you know, ag by right uses, but something we should talk about maybe are what are some CUP uses that would be compatible in ag zoning districts. Events, weddings, right? I mean, that those are always big conversations.
You just have that.
Yeah. Well, I guess for as a, not like a personal private wedding, but for like a business enterprise, you know, diversifying income. But
how much time did you spend on agricultural tourism?
Yeah.
Right. The board, you all that, and then all of a sudden the Board of Supervisors said no, and now we're going to come right back around to doing this again.
I think it'll go through this time.
Really?
Yeah.
Because agricultural enterprises.
That's what we are defining it as. Ag not
enterprise.
Tourism. It's not tourism, it's enterprises.
Ag enterprise. All it was a little change. So it is an ag enterprise, you're providing a venue.
Right.
Great.
And it's on the farm or ranch.
Mm-hmm.
It is an enterprise. Yep.
Commercial. Like Dowling's did.
Since you brought it up. As long as the disturbed area is 5 acres or less than 5%, whichever is less, which is allowable under Williams.
Yes.
So you're telling me what you guys did a couple months ago didn't need to happen if we did just wait.
That's what I was saying a couple months ago when it was in front of us, and it was like, we shouldn't even be here having this discussion right now, if it had been done right in the past. But yes.
Right, yeah, sure.
Yes, I think they should be allowable.
Okay.
Ag enterprises should be allowable on AG1, AG2.
Okay.
The question, which it all comes back to, is size.
Yes.
And what is appropriate and compatible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the simpler we keep it, the better we are.
Yeah.
And I think if we keep it to the 5 acres or 5%, whichever is less for area disturbed, leave it at that.
Don't have a threshold of occupants.
I would say leave it at the 5% or 5 acres, whichever is less.
Yeah, because I get a lot.
Because
what do you do? Sit up there with a counter and.
Yep. No, you'll have an area marked off, and it's real simple. If you have 10 acres, okay, you know the size.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 1,000 acres, you have the size.
Mm-hmm.
And in the conditional use permit, it will have the size of the area to be disturbed.
I I do think traffic plays a part in that. It's there.
As infrequent as it's going to occur.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This drives me nuts.
Dowlings have 4 weddings, 5 weddings a year.
I'm just saying traffic is a big thing with everybody.
Why?
Well, because you don't like to.
I've gone around in this county and played. Yeah. At times, you drive for miles, you never see another car.
I tell you.
Drives me crazy.
Just put in a 14-year subdivision, see how much people concerned about traffic.
Yeah.
Old people. Okay? So it's there.
When people. I'm an old person. I live on a street.
I'm just saying.
No. That, in this particular time, as big as this county is, I'm not worried about traffic.
Okay. All
right. I have more issues on yard sale day for Scott Valley yard sale than anything else, but that's only one day a week. I can live with it as much as it irritates me.
Thank you, because I went by your house that very day, sir, because I went to that yard sale.
Commissioner Hart.
Should, you know, a couple days a month or something, bird watching be allowed. And the reason I'm bringing that up, I'm going to take the Nature Conservancy property on Dyker in Chester County. This has been 20 years ago. They're generating anywhere between $35,000 to $40,000 a year, $3 per person visit per day.
For bird watching. It's an idea.
I've thought. The reason I'm saying that is because we've got a small group to come out every couple weeks. They spend the entire day counting birds on a ranch.
I've got one group that's doing that on our place.
Okay. They're trying to reconstitute the Mount Shasta Audubon Society. They brought them out the other day. We had people all over the place. Now we've got Audubon on the ranch, national Audubon, because there's a cattle safe grazing Audubon program. You have to go through a certification to get invited into the program. So I suspect somewhere down the road they're all going to want to come, whatever. Should that, to me, that's no impact on any county services whatsoever. You shouldn't need a use permit to do any of that.
I would agree.
I would say that's, you know, part of the integral workings of the ranch.
I would also include in there UC Davis tours to do field visits, to look at cattle, to look at handling procedures. That's all part of the ranch and agriculture. I would say no permit needed. That is different from a wedding or a class reunion.
Not my belief, because you're still going to have a big group of people for a short period of time doing an activity and then they're gone.
Here's the question. Are you generating revenue from it?
No.
Then it doesn't need a permit.
Right.
If you are charging for the venue, that triggers the use permit on the 5% or 5 acres.
Okay.
If you are deriving revenue from the activity, from the ag enterprise, that triggers it. Because we don't charge UC Davis, don't charge Audubon Society, so no permit needed. That's where I would put it. Mr. Phelps.
Currently, agricultural enterprises are allowed in just AG2. Are you wanting it to be in AG1?
As poorly zoned as our county is, yes.
Okay.
Because we have Ag 1 that is not really Ag 1. And I think in the process of getting a use permit for an ag enterprise, I think between staff and the landowner, there would be an assessment of the location of that venue.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, maybe a call could be made.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, out in the middle of prime ag.
Right.
But in an existing building, it's fine. That's what I think.
Look at Pastures of Grace. Prime example. They have a barn that's been fixed up. It's on the ranch. It's a perfect ag enterprise venue.
So I guess the next one that would be similar would be RR, right? Because would you want ag enterprises on rural residential as well?
Not R2. I don't.
Right, the smaller scale RR.
RR would be like rural residential.
Yeah.
Right.
But.
Well, our previous discussion, the tier, whether you're R2 or R40, maybe it would be appropriate on R40, but once again, it's either the 5 acre or 5%, whichever is less for disturbance or intensity.
So are you making a distinction between what we used to call ag tourism versus what our code currently has as agricultural enterprises?
Say that again.
So we used to, when this came around last time, we called it ag tourism, and it was things like wedding venues and whatnot, concerts, stuff like that. Now we are proposing to call it agricultural enterprises because it's a use that's accessory to agriculture. However, we already have an agricultural enterprises listing in Ag 2, which has things like food processing and warehousing and stuff like that. So are you proposing that what we currently have as agricultural enterprises also be allowed on the rural residential zoning district if it's 5% or less or 5 acres or less?
On R40,
so,
not R2.
So, and we had talked, mentioned earlier that potentially making larger parcels that are currently rural residential agricultural zoned, making them non-prime agricultural, which would make that a moot point. So is that still what you would like to see? Okay.
And in answer to add to your earlier question or statement, ag enterprise definition has just gotten broader.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would include jackpot roping, reining, cutting,
dressage.
Wedding, dressage, guest speaker,
clinic?
Yeah, horse clinics.
Okay.
I mean, that's how I've kept out of being in trouble with the county. We don't charge the people who come to our horse clinics, because I know as soon as I charge a dime, I need to get a use permit. We provide the stall for them to put their horses, provide the arena, and they just pay the clinician for what they learn.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, we only have 6 to 8 people. So.
Is that how we want to divide it? If it's for profit, you're collecting money, then you need a use permit?
Mm-hmm.
That's what the county told the Allens when we dealt with their project here a couple months ago. The trigger was they were going to be generating revenue from the activity. If you are not generating revenue from the activity, by right, it's allowed.
That's good.
And it's also how we've handled like the Cater Creek JH Ranch discussions too about pay to play.
Now, having said that, I do think that that use permit or what the use permit for the activity should be reasonable in its expense to the property owner. It's got to be simple to do and affordable, because otherwise you're going to price out.
That's right.
We want people to play by the rules. We want to be firm, fair, and consistent. But if we end up making it too onerous and too expensive, people aren't going to play.
Well, it's allowed outright. There will be no fee.
Yep.
Through the chair, this has been a number of years ago. A friend of mine lived outside of Winters, California, had a ranch, and they had a bunkhouse, and they had an RV place where you could hook up, and they charged so much a day, you got breakfast and dinner. The kids could go out and play. They had calves, they had everything, and it was so much a day, and it was minimal. And if they wanted to sleep in the bunkhouse, they slept in the bunkhouse. And it was, like you said, ag tourism. And they were booked all summer.
Ag enterprise, and it's called ramping.
It's called what?
Ramping. Like glamping and camping, it's ramping.
Okay.
You camp on a ranch, it's ramping.
And they had two kids that were in their early teens, and they were having a ball, playing with the kids that were there.
Ag enterprise.
Wow. liability today? Oh, goodness.
Got to carry it for the horse clinic anyways.
You're braver than I am. That's why I got home with no Christmas inside.
That's why I can always refuse service.
Got one right on the gravel pit gate that says, what don't you understand about the word no trespassing?
Yeah. Okay, anything else on agriculture zoning districts? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that takes us down to, kind of we already hit 9, didn't we?
Yes.
We had the discussion on industrial contractor yards.
This is it.
Okay.
We had one more just really brief comment on this agenda item. Right now we have what, res 1 through 4, and then we have RR. Staff would like to get the commission's input on condensing that or reducing the number of zoning districts we have. You had mentioned R40 and R2. Is there anything from the commission's side, do you have a stance or a strong preference as to reducing res 1, res 2, res 3, res 4. We're a really small county. It doesn't make sense that we have so many districts, zoning districts. Is there any desire from the board or the commission to simplify our zoning districts?
Is that your recommendation?
I think staff would be recommending that.
Well, yeah.
I think that's up to you too.
You're asking us to read the minds of those 5 supervisors. Uh-huh. I'm not going to do that.
I will say this. We need a minimum. Mm-hmm. And we need a maximum. Mm-hmm. And the supervisors have already told us, as it applies to vacation rentals, that 2 is the minimum. And we had a discussion here today that would allow certain agricultural increases in productivity if you were 40 or greater, so an R40. I'm good with an R2, I'm good with an R40. The others in the middle I really don't care about, as long as we have a min and we have a max. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would that mean RR would go away, or we would keep that as well?
Take that up with the 5 who are elected. I've provided my guidance. Mm-hmm. We have a min, we have a max. If they want to do something different, that's...
We need to break out multi-family housing also.
Because when you get down to the 1,
the 4 can come to
it's more restrictive.
Yeah.
If you have an R4, okay, you can have split it into 2 R2s. You could split it into 4 R1s if you really wanted to, but you're going to be more restricted what can be done there. I really have no feeling one way or the other. As long as we have them in, and we have the max allows more AUMs. By right.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Mr. Phil?
Yes, sir.
Do you have this same kind of a program at the Board of Supervisors now, or is everything just here at this point?
Everything is here at this point, and I will say it's a lot more interactive in this format, and we get a lot more done. In the board chambers, we won't get a lot achieved except for a rubber stamp, because it's a very impersonal, you're at a podium. There's no input really from the board. It's either up or down, live or die.
Mm-hmm. They don't have conversations there.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
So that's why we want to get as much.
So the ball's all in this court right here.
Yeah, so we front load it here, mm-hmm. and then we bring what we feel is the best product to the board.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you're going to say, okay, Planning Commission mm-hmm. said they wanted a min, they wanted a max.
There you go.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Other questions?
No, sir.
On this?
I think we're good. Thank you for the input.
Okay.
We appreciate
it. Well, thank you all for engaging in the dialogue. Now may we move on to old business, safety element?
Yes.
Because I have a couple items on that one. Because I did read that through again.
Oh.
I'm not missing something in between. Am I agenda item 2? Okay.
No,
so
you're
good. And we don't... there's no vote or anything on this.
No.
It was a workshop.
Correct.
Okay. Old business, agenda item one, general plan 2025 safety element update. Staff, I will turn it to you.
Thank you. James Phelps, senior planner, County of Siskiyou. At the last meeting, the commission had requested changes to the draft safety element. The first change was an addition of a new chapter regarding wildlife hazards. Staff created chapter 6, wildlife hazards, which is found on page 49. This chapter, we split it out into two sections, one dealing with transmission of possible diseases, vectors, and the other just the threat of physical threat of wildlife. Disease transmission, we went through the three major ones that are in California.
You missed the fourth one.
Uh-oh.
Brucellosis.
Brucellosis?
And that is the primary reason why I brought this one up, because of our elk, because of our elk herd.
Okay.
Continuing to grow, and there is no vaccination program in the elk herds to prevent it. And they are intermingling with cattle.
And that's different than the chronic wasting disease. Maybe that's
right.
That's where I erred, because I thought maybe it was the same, and
nope.
I put it that.
Brucellosis.
Brucellosis.
And then I'll let you continue. Oh, there's one more clarification. You made a mention, or whoever wrote this,
uh-huh.
in the discussion on West Nile virus.
Uh-huh.
I thought I read in here somewhere where it said there's no vaccine. There is vaccine for West Nile, for horses.
Oh, for horses.
And there has been for 12, 15 years, say, quite a while. I'm trying to remember where I saw that, but it was in the West Nile discussion.
Page 51.
Yeah, there is no vaccine. There is a vaccine for horses. So
okay.
Strike that sentence.
Maybe I can modify it. I think that was meant to indicate for humans, so I can maybe change it to.
There's vaccine.
I'm
no, there's
sure.
no vaccine for humans. There's treatment for humans. There's vaccination for horses.
Yeah, I'll amend that.
You don't have tuberculosis in here either.
No, TB should be in there for wildlife transmission as well. Brucellosis and tuberculosis need to be added.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't really clear how in depth, just because, you know, safety element's always that general overflow, but we can add those to transmission possibilities.
They are more of a concern, really, than West Nile and
bird flu.
Bird flu, really. Now,
and that was
East County bird flu is a concern, but we don't have a lot of chicken growers commercial over there.
And that was the conclusion of our staff when we read through it. It's endemic, or it's existing in Southern California, Central California, but a lot of these things, just, you know, our location up in the north makes it more, we're more protected.
Yes.
And then for predator hazards, I know Mr. Hart, we wrote this section for you, sir. Gray wolves. This is a picture of OR 85. Went to the fish and game website. That's him. That's
no,
I didn't.
Yeah,
so that's him.
See him about once a month.
Yeah. So, and then just recently, I guess Fish and Wildlife has initiated a strike team. They're calling it. Sounds pretty impressive, but they have rubber bullets, I believe, and they're available to you for 24 hours a day.
Oh, please!
It even made the front page of the Mount Shasta Herald.
Yeah. No, I just heard it on the radio. I didn't include it into the safety element. I heard it this morning, but. We did a section explained about the history of the wolves and how they got here. I couldn't find any information on the actual number, and I think that's by design. They probably don't want the public to know the actual number for the whale backpack, but it's got to be at least 10, just based on the math.
Oh yeah.
You know, but they don't give the actual number.
It's more like about 25.
Yeah. But they're always dispersing.
They're splattered. Yeah. I was chasing them Monday.
Yeah. So we discussed wolves. We went through, we discussed mountain lions. Mountain lion threat's not really a big threat. Mountain lions, they like deer more than anything else. You know, if you're drunk and you're out in the woods by yourself, maybe that's an issue. But other than that...
Mr. Phelps, I would... So, in relation to the lions, it's all relevant to where you live. I see 1 to 2 cats every week. I see 3 to 4 bear every week. The reason we're putting this in here is because if you're moving to Siskiyou County, doing business in Siskiyou County, and you're in the rural part of Siskiyou County, it is not a rare occurrence that you see a wolf, a cat, or a bear.
Mm-hmm.
It's a daily occurrence for a lot of us.
Yeah.
Well, for some of us, but it's because of where we live.
Yeah.
It's all in perspective. I have to live with them day in, day out.
We did talk about that, how they're all over, right? We talked about they're in McLeod, they're in Arvika, you see them in Dunsmuir, you see them in Mount Shasta. They're obviously out in Scott Valley, up on the hills, but we also have to try to balance what the safety element is, right? It's the danger to the people, and I understand danger to the livestock is secondary to that and related to that, and so we include that, but we also want to make sure we include the likelihood of injury to human. And that's where we're going with that.
I've got a pride of 5 of them.
Say that again?
I have a pride
of lions.
Of 5 of them, and one of them's collared.
And I have 4.
And they're right next to where they have that music festival. They run over the top of that ridge.
Oh, wow.
We have a place there that we call Cat Rock. We get pictures of them every 2 weeks.
It's interesting, Siskiyou County, right, we had the deer mountain lion study that was conducted a few years ago, authorized by the Board of Supervisors. They came up with some numbers, and we used that data to calculate, you know, what the estimated number of lions are based on the county's land size. It's really a rough estimate, right? Because it's going to be different depending on density, you know, developments and stuff. But if we just had to do an average, 36 or 59 mountain lions in Siskiyou County, it seems very low to me. But on the flip side, when we go to the bear numbers, using their same density standards, they said for bears we had somewhere between 6,000 to 15,000, which seemed a bit high. Mm-hmm. So
that's low too.
Yeah. But I didn't.
There's
a
body count on Gazelle Mountain every day.
Body count on bears.
Oh, there's a dead bear at least once every 2 days getting hit on Gazelle Callahan Road, going over Gazelle Mountain. Every 2 to 3 days, there's a new road kill, and it's a bear.
Hmm. Well, that should take care of the population.
Not even definitely.
The study that you quoted here, UC Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
They did that on us. It's been quite a bit of time.
About
that.
They seemed pretty thorough. I read it. It was like a couple hundred, maybe 300 pages. Very thorough. Mm-hmm.
They were tracking. They were following the deer corridor, which comes out of South McLeod, up through Military Pass, down through Butte Creek, across Grass Lake, comes back around, and it wraps all the way down to Shasta Springs. The whole migration corridor there from deer follow.
No, we've been, for the safety element, we've really tried to use like local sources for the information because it's Siskiyou County's safety element. It makes no sense to use generalized data from California, that sort of thing. We really want just our local data. And this was the best source that I found. So if you had another source that you would recommend us looking at, we would do that. But this was, right, it's a university, it's authorized by the
board.
Your
source is fine. The thing to glean that this doesn't share in the report is that with the influx and increase in wolf population in the center of the county, i.e. Shasta Valley, it has pushed the cat and bear population west, which is why I am now seeing more bear and mountain lion than I did years ago. And it's the cats actually push the bears, and the bears are now real heavy Cecilville, Sawyers, Soames, Happy Camp, that bear population is getting pushed west because of the wolf population here to the east.
No, that is a good fact. I would like to put that in the safety element. So if I'm to understand, the whaleback pack, just their increase and stuff is pushing the other animal predators to the west of the county. No, that would be a good inclusion.
You know how many bears I saw Monday?
Well, I know how many morons seeing since the pack's growth over here. I used to see one a week or a month. Now I see one a day. And it's not the same one.
They're right out here east of Monday.
Yeah.
Out there in the flat.
Now, we did mention for the gray wolf discussion, like, just historically, people generally don't get killed by wolves in California, but we talked about how there hasn't been a wolf in California for 100 years, so...
That's why no one's been killed.
Yeah, you know, so the current situation probably doesn't reflect historical fact,
smart
you know?
Ass.
He's not afraid of anything.
No.
He's not. Absolutely not. I mean, I've chased him at 70 miles an hour in a Ranger and come to a complete stop, and he's 50 yards in front of me. He'll stop, turn around, sit in the road, and look at me like, okay, now what do you want? He's not afraid of you.
I'm protected.
At all.
Probably has given
he'll
me the
walk
finger.
Parallel to me and my white pickup in the flatbed along the ditch at about 5 miles an hour and not even care that I'm there.
Wow. So, do you know if the local ranchers have been authorized? I heard it on the radio that rubber bullets, you guys are allowed to.
That's been now okay because we have enough established, confirmed packs with pups in the state. We're in this, into what they call it, 2-2 wolf cover.
But you have to get prior approval from the department to initiate that based upon occurrence and presence. There's a process you can go through to get to that point.
And then we added in this chapter as well a little link to the Fish and Wildlife website where you can track the gray wolves if you want to in the county, and we explain why they don't show up on the map sometimes and why they do, because they're denning, that sort of thing. So if there's no further questions on chapter 6, we can move on. On page 58, we also added a discussion on, just because, right, the wolf population, the predators, they're drawn to these bone piles. So staff, we put, and we needed to fill this empty page, we put a section on proper handling and disposal of carcasses, and I provided some of the current laws in California and how it's supposed to be done, but just given the location of Siskiyou County and just the long travel times, it's really not feasible, I don't think, for most people to transport their animals, right, to a licensed rendering plant. They did say that you could do it on your property, right? I think you can bury it on your property if it was a normally occurring death. You bury it within 3 miles, I think, of my notes. It's been a while since I lived, but yeah,
miles. 3 miles.
Yeah.
So, since you brought this up, here's a question for council. State law, it's illegal to bury a dead horse on your property. Can a county allow within their general plan an activity that the state does not allow? Can we override it? It's an obsolete law. At one time I knew the background and the history. It was passed in late 18, early 1900s in California that made it illegal to bury a horse on your property. It had to go to a rendering facility.
Well, it's considered a law of statewide concern, no. So, and there's some room in the state law that allows for local variation, but generally statewide,
I was just wondering, because there are a lot of dead horses that have been buried in Siskiyou County, despite that law being on the books.
We have it in the ag ordinance. It's allowed
exactly.
In Siskiyou County.
That's what I was wondering.
4 feet of cover is
considered a companion animal.
Right.
But that's fine. Well, that's the type of accommodation where it's probably an accommodation that it's not an absolute state.
You got a friend with a bag.
Obviously, a local entity can't pass a law that's conflicts with state law unless it's understood or there's an interpretation somewhere that the state law will accommodate local jurisdictions instead.
That's what I was wondering. There may be language that allows for a county or a local jurisdiction to defer to their own based upon the demographics or whatnot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Chair Powell. To use a silly example, if the states ban prostitution, generally county of Siskiyou can't license houses of prostitution.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Which brings up another question, but you had a question.
I would say for this problem, right, it's a countywide problem. It'd probably be better dealt by the county. To me, it makes financial sense for the county to just implement one site in the county and have a service that went out and just picked up the animal and brought it there. You know what I mean? It would take one county employee, one big truck. You know what I mean? Maybe two. Right, and a lift, right? Drop it in the truck.
You're optimistic.
I'm just saying, it's not, right? We can build a bridge across the water. We can definitely pick up dead animals.
No, I get, and that's where we're trying to go with Mr. Smith. But
service out there. There used to be that service out there.
Well, Southern Oregon and Chico used to drive, we're here once, twice a week and render. But we don't have those rendering facilities anymore.
Well, who's coming and picking up out here in Montague every week?
They're coming out of Fresno.
Oh, boy.
You want to know how much it costs?
About $300 a critter or more?
Probably six.
Oh, jeez.
And if it's a horse, it starts at $1,500.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'll
allow you to continue, but I overheard my two compadres here talking about companion animals. One thing I don't remember in the zoning, and you don't have to answer this today, where are cemeteries allowed?
So cemeteries are at
both animal, which is becoming a more common deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how many pet cemeteries are just east of Phoenix Talent, driving out that old highway, going in the back way. There are at least three of them there.
Yep.
But it's something we need to be thinking of. It's probably a pet cemetery. One or two may start sprouting up if they're not already in existence. Mm-hmm. Here in
Yeah, it's not in our code, sir.
I'm just planting the seed.
Yeah.
Take a look, and maybe when you come back, let us know what you're thinking.
Well, generally in California, because we went through this, someone wanted to do a cemetery like next to the river or whatever. But cemeteries are generally attached to like an organization, like a church, that sort of thing. And so anywhere, I would think a church could, anywhere a church has land, they could put a cemetery. And that's how our code is written.
So it's actually a conditionally permitted use. And these are the requirements for it. It doesn't specifically call out human versus animal cemeteries. But because of the potential for the bodies to be discovered in the future, there needs to be a recorded map for specifically, I would imagine, for humans. I don't know that we want to have a mapped pet cemetery.
Correct, but where would we allow a pet cemetery? And what restrictions? That's something to chew on, because it's coming to Siskiyou.
Ms. Jarup just said Article 15, which is basically anything anywhere the commission feels it would be appropriate.
It could be permitted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's linked to that church, right? Okay. So if a church has RR land, it might be appropriate to have it. Like you think about, was it Gazelle, right? They have that cemetery right out.
the ranch right next to me has four people buried on and whatnot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of older. Well, but it's recorded.
I'm just sorry for detouring and going down a rabbit hole.
So the third item that we changed was on page 60. I know the commission had issues with the original, so I went and downloaded the new page 60.
This is page 60. What
did we change?
Are you talking 59 dealing with climate and temperature?
Yes, page 60. Yeah.
I noticed the table. Yes. I like that historical one. Change 0.0. It's just we've shifted.
What chapter is it? That's what you mentioned last meeting.
Chapter 7.
I'm glad the data supported what I said.
After that?
Yeah.
68.
Oh, it must have changed.
For once, NASA and I agree.
Oh, because you must have.
Oh.
But yeah, we just changed the map on that. And then you had talked at the last meeting regarding the ag department and reaching out to them. So we did reach out, but I think they're just busy this time of year. So we used the crop report, and we pulled a bunch of information from that just to show how, and it doesn't look like they published that livestock report in a few years, because it went on the website, and their latest was from 2022, unless you have different information. But all I could find on their website was the latest was from 2022. But basically, we pulled out the numbers showing how drought has affected the county, or at least in that period of time for that for the report, for the reporting period. And I don't need to read it to you, you see it. But basically, just during that time, a lot more land was left to fallow. And we saw a drop off in crops as well as livestock.
So, once again, need to read between the lines and think of the year in 2022. That was when Tule Lake didn't get any water. Not because of drought.
No.
It's because the state and Bureau did not give them water in 22. That's why you had more acres fallowed. That's why it's so significant there. Mm-hmm. It's not because of drought.
Yeah, we did put that little, because right on the cover of that report, right, they talked about Tule Lake dried up a million years, right? After a million years, it's dried up now, right?
Yes.
So.
But it was because they weren't allowed to use their water, not because the water wasn't available due to Mother Nature. We need to make sure we're clear on that. And then the cattle.
I wonder, Chair Fowle, if we want to pick a fight in our safety element with the feds and the state, because if we phrase it that way, because based on the drought maps.
I would just be cautious on assigning that fallowing due to drought.
Okay.
There was a perceived drought. They were dry in southern Oregon. We were not dry in northern California. But because we're part of that unit, we're assigned extreme drought.
Yeah. I wonder if we could just put a sentence down here, right? We have that, and then put a sentence here that says, you know, a lot of the water shortages were due to governmental actions at the state or federal level.
That's
then
fine.
It's not offensive.
That's
it's
fine.
Not, okay.
That's fine. And then I would be, your statement there on the gross receipts on livestock production falling, that was not due. So in 21, we were short feed and cattle sold. There weren't as many cattle to sell in 22, but it was not because of 22, it was because of 20 and 21. And
I wonder
then
if it
we
makes
still
sense.
Have fewer numbers in 23, 24, but the market went up. So with fewer numbers, we actually had higher sales. So be real cautious on drawing comparisons.
Maybe just
I would
take
just
out.
Strike
yeah.
that last sentence, the total gross,
yeah,
I'd get rid of it. There were the factors that led to that were not climate related.
Okay.
It was market related.
No, this is good. And then there were some questions at the last meeting on how the U.S. Drought Monitor holds its data. So I went and I read up on that. And I read there's just basic, and we added a section on page 61 on that. Right, basically it's a partnership between three different organizations that are being downsized now. But until they are fully downsized, there's still the U.S. Drought Monitor. And they pull their data from local sources, you know, so it's the best available data we have. You know, is it perfect? I don't think it is. Rarely is everything perfect. It's just we use what the best we have. So I think it'd be okay to use the data on this. We also talked a little bit on page 61 about the changing growing season that you had talked about earlier. I wasn't sure if we had gotten this part right. So
no, not extended. It has shifted.
Shifted.
We are warming up later, but staying warmer longer. The growing season has remained the same. It's just shifted in the year.
So warming later in the year and staying warmer longer.
Yes.
The growing season is the first frost to the last frost. Is that how they determine
it? Yeah. And if you look at it, we're having frosts in June and in May now, where last frost 25, 50 years ago were in March, April.
It's still 90 days.
We're still 90 days, it's just it's shifted. Yep.
So how does the commission feel about, because just the official sites, right, they talk about how California has 50 more growing days now than it did, I guess, 100, 200 years ago?
That's 100. When you get to the Sacramento Valley South.
So maybe this would be relevant here. Maybe we should take this section.
Yeah.
Okay. But we'll add a section talking about the shifting.
Same number of days, it's just
same
shifted
number.
Its time of the year.
So I wonder if we should keep those, but say those type of statistics are probably more, oh, she's already done it, are more relevant to Central California, the region, Siskiyou County's region.
I would not even include any mention of added more growing days because that is
take
not
the
case
section.
For us.
Take the whole section.
Yeah. Just simply the statement that our growing season has moved.
Shifted in the year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Based upon first and last frost.
Not to beat a dead horse again, but basically if in the past the growing season started in April, now we're saying it's probably going to start later towards May, but extend longer through the year.
Not longer.
The same amount of time.
Same amount of time, yes.
Same window.
What we used to call Indian summer is
it's
now still summer.
Just shift, okay.
But our spring is winter.
And then just on my surfing of the internet, I came across this drought task force that Siskiyou County has implemented. And I read up on that, and it made sense to include that, and so we included that, the drought task force. Basically, it's comprised of OES and, I believe, environmental health. I saw Dan Wessel on the video. So, yeah, they're working on a plan to help us with the drought.
And they take four dams off the plan.
Yeah.
Before you continue, that reminded me for some reason. Back on page 59, and this may be a requirement by state law in our general plan update, but the two rows, the low emission row, and the high emission row.
So these numbers.
What scale are we talking about here? Because I'm sorry, but between now and through 2100, Siskiyou County is never going to be a high emission county. And in the state of California, we are never going to have high emissions. So Is this simply a requirement that we, that this information is included in all county and municipality general plan updates, cookie cutter? This is what we're looking at.
We need to be out in Shasta Valley every morning.
You have high emissions?
Wow.
Methane.
It looks like Southern California out there. You can't see mountains.
Really?
Yep.
From emissions or from dust?
From emissions.
From bovine emissions?
From burning firewood.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. All the time. You don't see the smog belt out there.
Really?
Plus the dust. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Okay, well, maybe I withdraw my comment, but I was just wondering if this was a cookie cutter.
I could give you some help. Basically, the safety element, we're required to do a vulnerability assessment, but we don't have the 100,000, 200,000 to hire. So what we've done is the state, UC Davis, commissioned a doctor, somebody, she has a lot of initials, but they did an area study for Northern California, right, about what the shortfalls are, what the projected emission levels will be, and this is the official state numbers, right? And so we're required to discuss this, and so we're just repeating what the state has given out.
And so I guess the reason behind my questioning this is this considering catastrophic wildfire incidents, and that is what likely is triggering the high emission, low emission. It's not necessarily due to human activity, increased in transportation, etc., but the growing risk of wildfire incidents, acreage encompassed, and emissions through there. Is that what I'm sensing?
I feel like I listen to the radio too much because I keep leaning on that. But on the radio, I heard the state guy was talking, like the leading cause right now is transportation. The second leading cause are wildfires.
Okay.
So between the two of those, that's why this and these numbers here may not be specific to Siskiyou County, but it's specific to the northern region of California. Okay. So it includes MODOC, Trinity. But yeah, these would be the numbers for our area.
Then that would make sense because the Happy Camp sensor, the number of times it's unhealthy because of the, okay.
And the new thing now is the prescribed burning that's going on, and you're going to see it up here toward Four Corners. You see it at the park here, and the burn piles that are out there in the forest. It's just huge.
Yeah.
They're going to be burning for, this isn't for home heating, this is burning.
Yeah, preventive, right?
Yeah. Okay, you can continue. That was my question.
And then on page 71, which is, we're just skipping around based on the changes. Chapter 8, Emergency Management. The commission had wanted us to include the Siskiyou County Agricultural Department, so we put them here. I put them after public health and before the local hospitals. To me, that made more sense, right? They're non-law enforcement, but they're involved in health. And so we put a section in there. And then skipping ahead, since we're already in this area, we did a better explanation about our medical resources in the county. I went through and tried to explain what a level 3 and a level 4 trauma center are. Basically, Siskiyou County, we don't have a lot of good facilities. If you're really hurt, you need to go to Asante. You need to have that helicopter fly you. But Mercy Medical, now Shasta, is a level 3. That's our highest level hospital here in the county, and then Fairchild, they stabilize you, get you on the helicopter, and get you out. So, and I try to define that just because my assumption is it's going to be average people in the community reading this, and we write it in a way they're going to be able to understand the difference between Fairchild and Mercy Medical.
Question, which may not answer, may not be available, with Fairchild's new facility that they're planning on breaking ground on, will that kick them to a level 3?
I don't have an answer to that, but we could look into that.
I was wondering if they were going to improve on their trauma center or if they were just expanding their existing service. If you don't know, it's no problem.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't heard one way or the other.
Yes.
I'll just say I did read it. I think it's both trauma and generally medical, you know, doctor group, medical group, and the hospital. That's what I read.
You didn't hear it on the radio?
No, I didn't. I read
I think this is you, James.
It's a long drive.
So I'm looking on the Fairchild website, and it said it's expanding by 25,000 square feet for a two-story building. The new emergency department will be on the first floor. A new lab will be on the second floor, and it'll give added capacity to both the emergency department and the lab.
And a lot of the way they classify these rankings, right? It's the equipment, but it's really the staff that you have on hand. You know, do you have a trauma surgeon 24 hours? And in a rural community, we generally don't have that. Like Fairchild, you're going to have a physician's assistant, just we can bandage you up, we can stop the bleeding, you know, give you an IV. But you know, the higher, the lower the number, right? Level one is the top. You know, you have more of that specialized surgery going on.
For Commissioner Mello, I'm going to take a 3-minute break.